brother.
What's up? This is
hey, a good recording, doing? Man.
Yeah, brother, like, dig it. Stop. Right on.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, I just had to indulge myself a little bit with Marvin Gaye and What's Going On and let it play a little longer than usual because, man, there's some stuff going on. That we are going to be talking about as we do every day, but a little bit more on today's show. Hey, good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
All right, man. I just, you know, needed to hear a little bit more of, one of the greatest songs ever produced, ever made, that will certainly be resonating long after I'm gone, as it's been resonating long after the guy who produced it has been gone. But I want to welcome this morning my good friend, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning to you, Professor Harvey. How are you?
Morning, Earl. But it's not sunny right now. It's overcast, though.
Okay, but majority of the time, it's overcast, but it's not 35 degrees, I take it.
No, it's a good climate. Right now at this time of the year, by the time it gets to 12 noon, it's up into the low 60s or to the high 60s or low 70s. So it's good weather.
You know, Professor Harvey, we've got a lot to talk about. Marvin Gaye asked the question, "What's going on?" Man, you know, we've got a lot of ground to cover. But I want to begin with you, that, you know, up seems down, down seems up, left seems right, right seems left. In a parallel world, Professor Harvey, how is it possible that a man, an accomplished man, like Raphael Warnock, brilliant man, good background, scandals aren't there, can be only leading a person like, you know, Herschel Walker by 2 points? Can you explain to me how people can possibly look at these two men, Professor Harvey, and draw two completely different understandings on, you know, which guy should be a better choice for you?
Well, Earl, it's not necessarily about competence, you know, accolade.
But shouldn't
it should be at a time like this? But it's not.
That's my point.
It's about personality.
Warnock has personality. Walker has none. Yeah.
But he has a personality, Earl, but it's one that would not be conducive to, one would think, to a prestigious thing like the United States Senate, you know, an election that pushes you to a national level where you're going to be representing, you know, yes, Georgia, but also the United States of America, and the oldest existing democratic society, rule society, a democratic republic in the world. At 200 and less than 250 years old, and it is the oldest republic, democratic republic in the world. Earl, that ought to tell you something. And it's not Herschel Walker. It's the people that vote for him. See, we've got to get past going after those individuals as they stick out there. That includes Donald Trump. Because what you are talking about are the people who vote for him. I watched the discussion the other night by a news reporter who went into some parts of Pennsylvania, and she was talking to six or seven, you know, voters.
I saw the same thing, but go ahead.
And to sit there and see the moment they mentioned the idea of should Biden run again, and their response was no, but they looked at something else, and they asked, how many of you think that the election was stolen or that was unfair? And all of them, she asked the question, do you think that the election was fair? Not one of them raised their hand to say that it was. But the moment she asked them if there were any problems with the election, automatically they chimed in. And it wasn't just, you know, there was one, maybe one or two white men, one of them a young white man, but the others were the white women. And so I say, you know, in all honesty, from what I'm seeing, the people that are holding the democratic process in our country in the palm of their hands are white women. They are in the majority. They live longer than white men do, and certainly black men and black women. And they are the greatest benefactors of the situation. They also bring children into this world. And they are voting on something that's not in their self-interest. They bring children into the world where now they have no control because the state is going to come into their lives and tell them what to do with their bodies. Health insurance, because women make less than men, they're going to need some type of health insurance, whether it's social from the government, socialized from the government, or private. It's going to be forced to be more benevolent because the government has a government health-sponsored programs. They're bringing to the world that politicians that they vote for believe in putting out guns out there so that before your child can even, it used to be by the time they got into their teens, but now it's with them sitting in school or in church, and they're being slaughtered by a reckless fool with a gun that the Republicans, not one Republican I don't believe in this country, has the guts to stand up and say, get rid of assault weapons. And if he does, that person will be primaried out before he could even blink.
So, Professor Harvey, before you...
So you're going to bring them into the world, but then you're going to let them be shot. And white women are at the cornerstone of this. If anybody wants to save this democracy, it's going to have to be them. I mean, we look at minorities, and there's a lot of blame and a lot of force and a lot of concern now being placed with the Latino community, because there's no doubt that Texas and Florida should be at least purple, but they're not. And the Latino populations are crucial in those two states. But we know what that situation is. So that's the school, the word is still out on that. But there's no doubt that white women have to decide whether they want to bring their children up in a dictatorial world, because that's where we're headed, or whether we're going to go down the path to a sustained democratic republic institution or nation of laws that believes in fairness and equality for all. And so we need to stop playing around with what minorities need to do here or there. No, this is rest in the hands of white women. And what I saw in Pennsylvania with those women is a microcosm, yes. But it is a macrocosm of exactly how this country sees itself. And for the first major and significant time, the world sees us. They saw January 6th, and they saw white women right out there with white men destroying a traditional sacred institution that many foreign nations wish they could have destroyed, but hadn't. And seeing that Confederate flag floating through the halls is something that Robert E. Lee and Joe Johnson and Longstreet and Stonewall Jackson and none of the rest of them could accomplish. And yet on January 6th of 2021, we saw it happen.
So Professor Harvey, before you go any further, I think we need to make sure that people understand when you mentioned the thing about guns, that you are a gun owner and that you are a man who trained people in the military, you're a veteran, on how to use firearms. You're not some guy who's anti-Second Amendment when you make that statement, and I think people need to understand that.
Yeah, and the thing is that, understanding it's not just, teaching them how to use the BRM, which is basic rifle marksmanship, but teaching them the principle behind it and also the consequences behind it when you squeeze that trigger. They need to understand that. And the thing is that you don't need assault weapons of any kind in the hands of the public. It's not designed for that. It's designed to destroy a whole lot of enemy quickly with one man. That's what it's designed to do. It's designed to put a lot of rounds downrange accurately in the hands of a skilled shooter. That's what it's designed to do. It's designed to increase the firepower of a fire team, which is a fire team of five or six or even two, or a squad of 12. You learn how to put that kind of firepower down with the current assault weapons that they have. It allows them to survive, but also to even overcome a superior enemy.
So, Professor Harvey,
that's what you put in the hands of civilians.
Professor Harvey, hang on. We got to go to a break. On the line, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. Do you know, Professor Harvey, there's so many different directions that we're going to be going this morning. But I want to go back to something that you said right at the top. And that's that the decision on the direction of this nation lies in the hands of white women. And so people may say, and the reason you say that is because clearly they outnumber anybody else in this country. And so... Many of them know the history of what white men have done to white women historically, and where and how they've treated them historically. So I find it hard to even comprehend, Professor Harvey, when you see the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Lauren Bobbitts, and as you stated, white women who were at the Capitol, have they just lost control of, many of them lost control of their senses? or just continue to capitulate to white men, many of the white men who are who want to supposedly take the nation back to a different time. That different time they're talking about relegated white women to the kitchen and the bedroom. Am I right?
Not only that, Earl, but it's extremely medieval. I mean, I looked at some of the basic information behind the Sharia law. And what the Sharia law does, it was done and shown, talked about it, and still talked about it in Afghanistan and other parts of Central and Western Asia, which is in Iran and other places. That's what's going on in Iran right now with the women rebelling against Sharia law.
Right.
And the amazing thing about it is that I was extremely proud of women, and mostly white women. When Donald Trump, if you remember when Donald Trump got elected, a day or two after he got elected, there were massive protests by largely women groups. They didn't get a lot of coverage like it should have, but massive protests in huge numbers all over the country. I was extremely proud of them and what they did. And the thing is that even when you had the George Floyd protests, that were not just nationwide, Earl, it was worldwide.
Right.
So when you hear some of these politicians, you know, Republican politicians right now campaigning, talking about violence and referring to, you know, the people who were protesting with the George Floyd, yes, there was some radical incident, but there was no storming of the Capitol. No, in fact, there was no storming of any state or city or county state Capitol building anywhere in the country with those individuals. That's because there was law enforcement there to keep it from happening in part, but also because those people didn't have the intent of doing that. There's nothing that you can compare with those marches and demonstrations, from the women to all of those people who were marching, by the way, with the Black Lives Matter movement. And yet none of those individuals, most of those individuals that marched and that was in those marches that amazed me, they were white. They weren't black.
Right.
And white women were out right out there in the floor, but you only got about three black folk in Montana or in South Dakota, for that matter, and two of them were gone on truck driving trips. So, I mean, so to see, you know, hundreds and thousands of them protesting, those were white people, mostly white. And don't get me wrong, when I talk about white women have been in the forefront of the struggles for civil rights and for human rights and the abolitioning of slavery since time immemorial. You know, so I'm not skewing those individuals. But I've been extremely impressed with Liz Cheney, even though I disagree with a lot of her philosophies. I've been extremely impressed with Liz Cheney and the things that she has done to stand up, and I knew it was going to cost her, but she did it anyway. So, and I was reading something the other night about the beginning of the Tuskegee Airmen or the Tuskegee Experiment to set up the Tuskegee Airmen and the role that Eleanor Roosevelt played in getting that bringing that project to fruition. So white women have always been in the forefront of that, and just like with Jewish Americans, you know, they ought to be thanked and congratulated for that, it's because history is not blind. If you look at it carefully, it tells you the truth with open eyes, and so I've always believed in that. You know, as a scholar. But the thing that we do have to see is that there's a trend. When you look at those numbers of what's happening with the Congress, and you look at the Congress, it changes every 2 years. And you study the Congress from the 103rd Congress when Clinton got in, came to power, all the way up through the 116th Congress, that Joe Biden finally takes, 117th Congress, that Joe Biden finally comes into play, and you begin to see a shift in the voting block of women. Now, to be honest, African-American women hold strong. You know, they were at 90% in this last election with Joe Biden. You know, so they're there. Black men faltered a lot. You know, because they, about 19% of them voted for Trump. I don't know where the hell their minds were. You know, but Latinos are the ones that are also bringing an interest to me, because like I said, There's no doubt that Texas and Florida should have stayed blue just like they were when Johnson was president. But it has changed, and their numbers have increased. And you would think that with those individuals gradually trending towards Republicanism, the part of the Republican Party, that the Republicans would go ahead and do immigration reform to get more of them to get citizenship.
Right.
But they don't. I mean, that's a chance. If they want to win over the Latino population, go ahead and get immigration reform passed. But that shows you what their intent is.
Outside is cloudy, but I like that better.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, I was watching, what's today, Wednesday? Oh, so I saw a commercial on this week, the first time I saw it. I've seen all these different commercials. The Republicans have put together a $1.6 billion buy of ads in the last several months in five states, including Wisconsin. And this particular commercial began by saying, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, "Judge a person by the content of their character, not the color of their skin." And then they said, "Governor Tony Evers here in the state of Wisconsin is judging white kids by the color of their skin." Professor Harvey, these people, you want to talk about dangerous? You want to talk about a nation that is on the trajectory that is going to create as unsafe a period of time that there's been in the last 60 years. We're headed in that direction, and Republicans don't care. They're ramping this up.
Earl, this is the Southern strategy. I remember I was watching some talk show on, what was the news show actually, on CNN, and they had one of the members of the Lincoln Project, and the Lincoln Project is made up of a group of
former conservatives.
Former Republicans.
Republicans.
Right. Some of them are still conservative. They're just Republicans.
Right.
They're just, they get run away from the Republican Party.
Right.
But they're still conservative.
Right.
And one of them was, who was the key ally to Lee Atwater. He was the true architect in the early 1980s of the Southern strategy. And what is the Southern strategy? And he just openly admitted when they kept asking, what is really causing this? He said, look at them, look at the camera, said, it's about race.
You and I know that.
Southern strategy. Yeah, sure. The Southern strategy is that we can always play it underneath, but when it really gets down to it and gets hard and it looks like we're going to lose, then we go for the race card. We play it because we know that at least those red states, and believe me, it's not just in the old Jim Crow South. Jim Crow South, when we talk about the old Jim Crow South, we're basically talking about the ex-Confederate states, the 11 states that seceded from the Union. And in addition, another four states, basically Missouri, Delaware, Maryland, and Kentucky. Those four states. Now, Delaware and Maryland managed to escape all of that, but Kentucky and Missouri are red states now. And then you add in Oklahoma. And then you pick up the North, west states of Montana, Idaho, South Dakota, North Dakota, because what happened with your migration that occurred in the 1950s up through the 1980s, I read a study some years ago that showed that those states, which are lowly populated, were being heavily populated by former Southern whites who had migrated up, just like they did to Indiana in the 1920s and 30s and 40s, and Ohio. That's why Ohio was so hard. Yeah, well, Iowa too. But it's so hard to figure out. Because, you know, when they left the South, just like blacks did in the 1920s and 30s, they fled up and they stopped and stayed in Indiana. And even when they moved to some of the other states that blacks moved into the cities, they moved into the rural and southern areas. So what they did is they brought that southern heritage and stuff with them. But needless to say, the red states of today far outnumber the blue states. And that's one of the other dilemmas that you see. It becomes harder and harder for the Democrats to gain a majority in both houses. And with the gerrymandering stuff that's taking on now at the state level, it is becoming almost impossible to unseat these Republican diehard incumbents. And they're running scared because they're scared to be primaried out by somebody that's more fanatical than they are. And they think that they can get by and skate by and go to Washington bashing the government that they're going to be getting a paycheck from and getting free medical care from. They flee to go to Washington, you know, promising to do all these things and put an end to the Democrats. What has nothing to do with the Democrats? It's like with inflation. The inflation has nothing to do with Democratic or Republican. So they keep saying he's been in office 2 years. Biden has been in office 1 year and 2 months and 10 months. We start to think about it. A president is elected on January 20th when he takes office. And he's only, if you do the math, from January 20th to now, he's been in office a year and 10 months, going on 11 now with November. So, I mean, where's your math going? In fact, it said 1 year and 10 months. I mean, so where are we going? He hadn't even been in that 2 years yet. And it took Donald Trump 4 years to get an $8 trillion deficit, wreck the damn economy, and yeah, he can't take all the blame because COVID has something to do with that. But Earl, the whole entire world is under inflation right now.
Yeah, I know. I talk about it every day.
The 10 largest economies in the world right now are all under the grip of recession or inflation.
But you know, Professor Harvey, it doesn't matter to these people. Truth does not matter whatsoever.
No, it does not.
They will argue with you and not even have a foundation or basis on truth in their arguments. And that's where the danger comes from, Professor Harvey. They won't even hear it.
Well, you see, it's a lot like a young 5-year-old kid playing in a sandbox along with some other kids. And he seems to be dominating things. And the rest of them don't want to go along with it. So while they're trying to rationalize with him, he closes he puts his hands over his ears and yells as loud as he can so he doesn't have to listen to what everyone else has to say. And that's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with some pestilent people who they don't have much to go for. They got to blame somebody. And you know why, Earl? It's because they, like all the rest of us, are scared. They don't seem to think we're scared, too. For example, one of the latest tricks that I've ever seen beside the race card that they're playing is the fear card, which is always the mantra of the nationalists and white supremacist groups. They play the fear card.
Yes.
Crime. And they're playing the criminal, yet they're the ones that allow assault weapons in the hands of folks, make it easy to get them. They're the ones that are suppressing the rights of a woman to vote. They're the ones that are denying people the right to vote. Yeah, so they create the fear. For the first time since the era of Bill Clinton, for the first time, we are now seeing suburban white America who fled these central city areas and fled out, you know, to the suburbs and to other urban areas that are largely less people of color, or those southern whites who hunkered down in their rural environments. For the first time, they're coming to realize that they aren't safe either. And the very fear that they brought on the central city by dumping guns and allowing drugs to come in, because there are no major drug factories in the central city. There are certainly no gun factories in the central city making guns. So how are they getting in there? So all of a sudden, now that containment that we used for so long, because we didn't look to resolve the crime in the central city, we looked to contain it. And that's what the law enforcement structure did. And then the politicians campaigned on, we're going to keep you safe by keeping it there. It's just like that movie, The Godfather, where the guy stood up and said, let's put the drugs in the colored neighborhood. They're all animals anyway. And that's the process that's been used over the last years. When COINTELPRO was created in the 1960s to go after, you know, dangerous groups, they were geared toward going after the Panthers. That's why they killed so many of them between 1966 and 1969. They slaughtered almost 17, and most of those kids, the average age was 19 years old. And we were angry and upset at the time at historical black colleges, because why didn't they go after the Klan the same way? If they had, we wouldn't be having these problems they have right now. But COINTELPRO, headed by J. Edgar Hoover and enhanced by all the states, was designed to go after those groups. So these individuals now that are complaining about what's happening to them, they set the seed when they allowed get out of control, and that's what Atwater and the others are saying with the Lincoln Project. We rode that tiger, Earl. We rode that tiger into the ground, and now we've fallen off. He's gonna eat us, and that's what they've done. They stand on the back of that tiger too long, and then they want to jump off, and they're scared to jump off because that tiger is gonna eat us. That tiger of hatred, racism, and bigotry.
So, Professor Harvey, I don't have to utter a sound, because you are just walking down this path that all of us see, and especially those of us who are people of color who lived in this country for some time, who have seen this, know exactly what it is. And it used to be they would try to cover this up, Professor Harvey. They would try, you know, they would try to at least not be as outward with it. But since Trump came on the scene, they are outwardly open with this. And even Republicans who in leadership, in political office, they go along with it now because they know that they've got an army of people who are angry because things aren't going their way. And so it's easy to point the finger and then jump on the bandwagon of, you know, those people of color are causing the problems in our country. They don't want to face the fact, Professor Harvey, that when you listen to what comes out of the mouth of these so-called Republicans, and right now, these fingers that are being pointed again at Joe Biden and other Democrats for inflation, for why the gas prices went up, those of us who have some common sense and read know that this is happening across the nation, the world. It is a global issue. But when you even point that out to these people, they ignore that totally and then jump on the race bandwagon. Because
they have to find something, Earl, because they have to have an answer. And that's why they are fed. They want to be fed what they call canned fed. Just give them a can of food and let them just feed them out of that, and let them eat that, and then they're satisfied. They have to have something to fill Phil Amont.
A cold food at that. Like, what do they call them? K rations in the military?
Yeah, MRE. they have to be spoon fed, because see, the thing is, they don't want to think. Now there are some of them who are thinking, and thank God, one of the reasons why you have such a large number of young people out there voting, especially young white people, is because they haven't been fed yet.
Hold the thought. We got to go to a quick break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Professor Bob Harvey is, and class is in session. We'll be right back.
While I'm way too young to be...
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. You know Professor Harvey. This almost reminds me of Reconstruction between 1860 and 1880, when W.E.B. Du Bois was explaining to a nation what was taking place. And for those who don't know or who don't remember, Professor Harvey, let's talk a little bit about that Reconstruction time in comparison to where we are now.
Well, there are several comparisons, but there are also some major differences. Remember that the architects of the Reconstruction era was the young fledgling Republican Party. And keep in mind that in 1860, when Abraham Lincoln won the contested election, where there were three other candidates, none of them got 50%, but Lincoln beat out the other three candidates, to win the presidency. And because Lincoln pushed for the idea of, he didn't want to abolish slavery, because at the time there were 15 states that had slavery, but he did want to abolish its expansion. The new territories out in Nebraska and Kansas and other places were opening up, and he wanted to make sure that we didn't expand slavery. So with that, Lincoln, got elected, and the moment he got elected, South Carolina, followed eventually by 10 other states, seceded from the Union to form the Confederate States of America. In essence, they attempted to overthrow the government of the United States because of an election, and it was a violent one. So we've seen this before, this move before. The only thing is that it turned into a shooting war that lasted 4.5 years and killed over 650,000 people. 420,000 of them were American soldiers fighting in the Union Army. I don't even necessarily want to even dignify the 240-some-thousand Confederates that died, because, damn it, they were treasonous. And most of your history books, not even the good ones that are pro-federal, even push this idea. But they committed an act of treason. Robert E. Lee, as great a general as he was, and so was Jackson, as great a general as they were, they were treasonous. They were in the United States Army. They resigned their commission, but they also took an oath when they went to West Point that they would protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. They were treasonous, just like Donald Trump. So we have to understand that the Reconstruction period that came about in the 1860s was against an act of an act of treason. And in 1867, the Congress passed a Reconstruction Act. This was after they approved the abolishing of slavery in 1865. Remember, the Emancipation Proclamation was nothing but an executive order that only depended upon the Union Army liberating folk. It was not until 1865 when they abolished slavery, and there were a lot of the Republicans who were opposed to that. But they had enough votes, and it was led by two giant men, one in the Senate by the name of Charles Sumner, Senator from Massachusetts, and Thaddeus Stevens, the congressman from Pennsylvania. So you had those Republicans, known as the Radical Republicans. There were about 12 of them that pushed through not only the abolishing of slavery in 1865, but they pushed through the 1866 Civil Rights Bill. They set up the Freedmen's Bureau. They went ahead and they were pushing through the making plans to make black citizens with the 14th Amendment. But Lincoln was going to be opposed to that. Now, keep in mind that Lincoln opposed a lot of the Reconstruction ideas because he wanted to try to unify the country, and he didn't want to necessarily upset Southern whites. But Thaddeus Stevens and Charles Sumner, two radical Republicans, said, damn them. And remember, when Lincoln was assassinated, his vice president was a Democrat from a southern state, Tennessee, and Andrew Johnson. Well, Johnson was going to push through Lincoln's policies now that he was deceased, and he was also fighting against the Republicans who controlled both the House and the Senate. And they ended up going after him. And it was really a political floozy move, but it was for high crimes and misdemeanors. They made up some stuff and went after Johnson, you know. And of course, they kicked him out. He was a Democrat, but these were Republicans. And so they went ahead and they after they got rid of him, they went ahead and they elected Ulysses S. Grant. And Grant, as a Republican, pushed through some legislation, but after 1870, Grant was useless because Grant was in the middle of a scandal with people surrounding him who were corrupt. And then once Grant came into play and left the office in 1877, then in comes Rutherford B. Hayes. Now, the Rutherford B. Hayes scandal is on the tip end of the Reconstruction period. Because by the time Hayes comes in 1877, the Jim Crow movement in the South, led by the Democrats, has already started. But remember one thing about the Republican Party of the 1860s and 1870s. That Republican Party was the party that got past the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. They were passed by Republicans. They were also able to put together a political machine in the South that broke the Democratic Party monopoly on the Southern states. Remember, the Southern politicians that ruled the South and set up slavery and ran this white apartheid system, they were all Democrats. So the Democratic Party has blood on its hands, too. That's necessarily give them a pass on anything because they rode that monster for a long time until finally Johnson broke their backs in 1965 when he passed that Civil Rights Legislation 64 and then the Civil Rights Act of 1965. When he did that, when he signed that legislation 65, he said, we just, you know, set the Democratic Party back in the South, you know, for the next two generations. Well, he was right. Because by 1980, most of those Democratic seats in the South had switched parties and joined the Republican Party.
So Professor Harvey.
So the Reconstruction period continued, Earl. It hadn't never stopped.
So Professor Harvey, the reason I wanted you to go over a little bit of that history is because when you hear people say critical race theory. I had somebody call here the other day and say they're teaching critical race theory. They don't want this history to be taught.
Well, Earl, the catch is that what they're doing is one of the oldest tricks in the book. If they're doing something to keep you from catching on to it, they blame you for it. That's the trick that they're using. It's a very deceptive trick. And it works at times that people don't think, just like with the idea of violence.
So, Professor Harvey, hold the thought. We got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You know, history class is open. Professor Bob Harvey.